Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we've got multiple good martinis. The first one is that NRO is back online. So go to nationalreview.com and catch up on the campaign spot and all the other great features there, as well as, of course, if you're listening to this, you've already probably been there to listen to the Three Martini Lunch. But the good martini today is that perhaps the favorite number cruncher on the right is officially predicting a Mitt Romney victory next Tuesday. And no, we're not talking about Dick Morris, who I'm shocked actually isn't predicting Republicans to win every Senate seat and a complete Electoral College sweep. He's only predicting a landslide for Mitt Romney. So we'll see who's closer to being right. But no, Karl Rove, the architect who obviously was critical to shepherding George W. Bush to two presidential victories. Karl Rove is a little too Machiavellian for me. I don't think he's as conservative as I would like him to be, but he does know his numbers. And he says when you look at the national polls and you see how below 50% the president is, when you look at early voting numbers in key states as well as across the country, Democrats are certainly well below their 2008 mark at this point, and Republicans are well above it. And when you look at independents and people who are planning to vote on Election Day, Romney's doing pretty well there, too. So I don't think he's necessarily predicting a huge Romney victory, but nobody's nerdier on the breakdown on these numbers than Karl Rove. And so if he's that confident, that's got to be a pretty good thing.
It is good news. He makes a fairly compelling case. There are a lot of folks who can throw up a bunch of numbers and make you feel good about it. You mentioned Dick Morris earlier, and I just want to point out that Dick Morris also believes that incumbent President Condi Rice is going to win her rematch against Hillary Clinton this year. So that's the other good news.
Right.
We all make the occasional erroneous prediction here. So what is worth noting about the Rove analysis, he goes through the early vote, he goes through the polling numbers, he goes through turnout models, he goes through Ohio. But one of the things that just jumped out the most at me is it says, based on all of its October polling, Gallup suggested that this year's turnout might be 36% Republican to 35% Democrat, compared to 39% Democrat and 29% Republican in 2008, which, by the way, doesn't look quite right to me. I'm pretty sure it was 39-32, at least in the exit polls. However, as folks who've been listening to this podcast for a while and those who read the campaign spot know, I've kind of been thinking all year long it'd be the neighborhood of Democrats with a 3 or 4 percentage point advantage. And if it is Republicans ahead by 1 percentage point, then we're on for a landslide because, obviously Mitt Romney is going to take the vast majority of the Republican vote. Barack Obama is going to take the vast majority of the Democratic vote, and the independent vote is for Romney, modestly in some polls, not so modestly in other polls. If that's the case, then this thing isn't even going to be close. And, people say, oh, what about the popular vote and electoral vote splitting? You can't have a very big split in the popular vote and still have the electoral college end up with the other guy winning. Just not terribly likely. If Romney is rolling to a landslide nationally, he'll do okay in Ohio. He'll do okay in Wisconsin. He'll do okay in all these key swing states. So, obviously, look, we don't know everything yet. But Rove, makes a fairly strong case here. And you think that if he, he might be hedging his words a little more carefully if he was nervous. So I think that Republicans can go into this election day feeling pretty good about things. Not 110% confident, not taking anything for granted, but Just feeling like they've, as long as everybody does their part, they should end up with at least 270 electoral votes and maybe quite a few more.
Keep the accelerator pinned to the floor is what he's trying to say. This is no time for assumptions or let up. There's a lot of close races in a lot of key states, and Mitt Romney needs the bulk of them to get to 270 and beyond. So now is the time to go all in, to mix a whole bunch of different metaphors here. Jim, on to martini number two now, and as cautiously encouraging as the presidential race looks right now, the efforts of the Republicans to take back the majority in the Senate, we've documented this on a couple different times, it's still out there. Dick Morris thinks there's going to be a +6 net, even with losing perhaps Maine and Massachusetts. But nonetheless, we've looked at some of these great opportunities for pickups that just don't seem to be materializing right now. And there's really only been a couple of ones out there where we're like, well, yeah, that's probably going to work out just fine for Republicans. And one of those is Nebraska. And it still looks like Deb Fischer is going to pick up that seat following the retirement of Ben Nelson. She's running against Bob Kerry, who was the senator who retired 12 years ago when Ben Nelson won. And Bob Kerry lived for the past 12 years in New York. He says the biggest problem with Obamacare was that it didn't go far enough. And Deb Fischer had been up by 20 points. Now it's close to, really, in, according to some polls, within the margin of error. And now Bob Kerry's got the stunning, quote-unquote, endorsement of everyone's favorite Republican, not really, Chuck Hagel. If Charlie Crist didn't exist, Chuck Hagel, who's gone from being a pretty well-respected member of the Republican Party to being just a thorn in the side and now pretty much a turncoat.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if you know the etymology of the name Hagel, Greg, but Hagel comes from an old German word meaning specter. Here's what makes this the bad martini. Deb Fischer's probably going to be okay. It's always unnerving when you get a poll that's kind of close right towards the end. It's a little late for you know, media buys or influxes of volunteers or something like that. Deb Fischer is going to have to win this on her own. I'm not sure that the NRSC has resources to spare or the various super PACs or stuff like that. If I were a betting man, I'd still bet on Deb Fischer winning. But this is just one of those things you just don't want to see these races slip through your fingers right at the end there. You also mentioned about this being a challenging cycle for Republicans in the Senate and a couple opportunities not materializing the way they had hoped. We'll see how things turn out in the Wisconsin Senate race where Tommy Thompson is taking on Tammy Baldwin. Here in Virginia, where George Allen is taking on Tim Kaine. In both of those cases, you may wonder if having a former governor come out of retirement and try to run again may not have been the right choice in an era of the Tea Party, that the retreads really were not the folks who were going to get really excited about this, that you kind of wanted a fresh face, some new energy. You know, Allen and Thompson could very well win these, but it just kind of seems like maybe the candidacy and the brand, so to speak, did not match the time. So there'll be time for recriminations. We'll see how things turn out. I still wouldn't be surprised if both those guys won. But it's just a sense that maybe the Senate did not turn out the way Republicans were hoping it was a turnout earlier in the cycle.
On to martini number three now. And Benghazi is usually martini number two, and for good reason. The latest revelation there is a cable from the consulate in Benghazi in mid-August saying that they feared an al-Qaeda presence near them and that there could be an attack. Obviously, security was not beefed up, and actually security was downgraded at some point prior to the attack. I don't know if it was after that cable or not. And now, Jim, the reason that it's crazy is because Newt Gingrich is out there openly saying this is a rumor, that networks have emails from the White House saying that the even in the midst of the terrorist attack, the White House was declaring that it was not a terrorist attack. And Sean Hannity says there are audio tapes out there of Tyrone Woods, the Navy SEAL, pleading for air support and other assistance, and basically getting shot down for any sort of assistance from the White House. So who knows if any of this exists? Who knows if it does exist, whether any of it will come out before Tuesday and if it'll have an impact? But this story just keeps snowballing, and it's snowballing because somewhere inside the White House, they decided telling the truth was a bad idea politically.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where the known facts of what happened in the run-up to Benghazi, what happened that night in Benghazi, and what happened after Benghazi strike me as damaging enough to this administration. If Sean Hannity is saying something, I know he believes it to be true, and I certainly hope it is true. I don't think Newt Gingrich would completely make something up like this, but it just is a little unnerving to see these kinds of you know, rumors spreading around. I kind of feel like this is important enough that we ought to be dealing with what we know and speculation. There are other, perhaps even more ominous rumors about General Hamm and other folks who wanted to launch a rescue mission and were told to stand down and all kinds of stuff like that. One of the great frustrations here is the administration keeps saying, well, we're investigating and we'll get back to you. And as long as there is this open space here, speculation is going to fill the vacuum. And so it'd be really great to get concrete known facts out of here, knock down any rumors that are false, or confirm what seem to be ever more serious allegations of totally mishandling a very dangerous situation in Benghazi. So as somebody had observed earlier, Greg, isn't it great that Hillary Clinton took responsibility for Benghazi? Haven't we learned so much since then? Oh, wait, nothing's happened since then. She said she took, you know, responsibility, but then nothing happened. This is kind of a pattern of this administration, the loud declaration of responsibility being taken and then no follow-up. I'm hoping that we, in the not-too-distant future, get all the answers we're looking for on this. In the meantime, I would just urge anybody who's talking about it in a punditry or in public venues, try to be very clear about your sources and what you know and what you don't know, because there's a lot of speculation floating around out there, and it just feels like it's polluting the news atmosphere, so to speak, to have these kinds of, you know, very ominous sounding, but as yet unproven allegations floating out there.
Yeah, so we'll see if anything else is revealed officially before Tuesday. Jim, big day tomorrow, final jobs report. We know that the last one was kind of messed up, and now there's a whole bunch of different private sector recalculations of what the jobs picture looked like. So we could see anything tomorrow. That's always exciting.
My prediction, soggy.
I guess that's a fairly safe prediction. Jim, enjoy your day. Talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to see you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.